welcome to Books Unbound, the podcast where we unbind books to get to their hearts with your hosts, us. It's Ariel and...
Raylene. Hello.
Welcome to this episode of Reading Confessions. So, this is an idea that we had ages ago, eons ago. And just, it's been such a crazy, wacky year with all sorts of, like, author interviews and artist interviews and, like, so much fun. It's all been good. Yeah. But all of this fun stuff that has kind of taken over a lot of our episodes that we kept not being able to do this one. But we're so excited to be sitting down to do this today. Mm-hmm. We asked our patrons to send us voice clips with their bookish woes.
Yeah.
They're reading problems, and we want to try and help. Will we be able to help? That's a different question entirely. Will it make good radio? We hope.
I think so. Yeah. And we're kind of inspired by Cheryl Strayed a little bit in doing this. Yep. We're kind of, it's like an audio Dear Sugar type of vibe. So we have only received 3 voice clips so far. So we're going to be going through all of those today, but we're hoping to get more so we can do this again. Hopefully it works out and you guys enjoy it. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I think it's going to be so much fun. I also want to say another inspiration, for me at least, is the first episode of, not the first, I think it's the second or third episode of Sailor Moon.
Okay.
Have you seen Sailor Moon recently? Oh, yeah.
The one where they're all listening to the radio?
Yes.
Yeah.
The one where it's like, it's at nighttime and they're like, he has a radio advice program and that vibe, if it hadn't gone creepy, that vibe of just like, everyone's like listening to their radio to hear people's problems and like hear the advice. I just like always loved that episode and that vibe.
That's I love the that vibe you say I'm that because that reminded me of when I was younger. I used to always read the like embarrassing stories in magazines. Like there was if there was ever a segment for that. That was my favorite. Those. Like advice, embarrassing stories, all of that. I just love that stuff.
Totally, I totally agree.
So this can be all of that.
We're so excited. Listen. So without further ado, let's jump in. Let's dive in. I was so excited to dive in that I said jive in.
Jump, dive.
We're going to start with a message from Claire.
Hello, Ariel and Raylene. My name is Claire and I'm from Seattle, Washington. So my bookish problem is that my dad and I buy each other books every year for birthday, holidays, etc. He always buys me, though, big books. Think John Steinbeck's East of Eden, The Brothers Karamazov, etc. And I am afraid of big books. Consequently, I don't read any of the gifts I get from my dad. How can I get over my fear of big books and have, you know, a better, I guess, bookish relationship and bookish conversations with my dad? Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
What a phenomenal message, Claire. Thank you so much for your... for your woes.
I love this one too because you also have big book fear, so this is gonna be interesting to see what you have to say.
Yes, okay. I really related to this with the big books fear. It's really funny. So the beginning of 2020, I made a video on my channel, on my YouTube channel, about big books. I know. It was January 23rd, 2020. And it was called Trying to End My Fear of Big Books.
Okay, I have seen that.
And I had a TBR. It was called, I had Moby Dick, Crime and Punishment, IQ84, The Secret History, Dune, and the Frida Kahlo good lord, biography.
Yeah.
I have not read any of those.
Not a single one. Wow. I don't think you're ever going to end your big book fear. You're deluding yourself thinking that you ever were.
Oh my God. Really? You can't say that.
Prove me otherwise.
So I made this video and I basically just talk about like, why am I scared of big books and why I want to get over that fear. Then the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And I did not have the wherewithal to read the books.
Fair enough.
So that project just totally fell apart. But the reason I bring it up is simply because I feel you, Claire. I really do feel you. Raylene, where do you think your big book fear is at? Do you think you're scared of them?
I'm not scared of them. The only thing for me about big books that frightens me is how long it'll take me to read them. It's not that I'm scared of anything about the books themselves. It's just like,
okay,
imagine, you know, there's only 52 weeks in a year. Imagine on average I can read one book a week. I obviously do usually read more than that, but let's just say I'm reading one a week. Yeah. As soon as you like double or triple the size of the book, that's going to take me closer to 3 weeks to read.
Too true.
And so it just makes me think of how fewer, like, I'll just not read as many books that year, which is fine, but that's my fear. Like, I want to read as much as I possibly can because I have so many books that I want to read. So the time it takes is what scares me about them. But I love them.
I do think, you know? I do think that I agree with you. Like, I do think that that is why I'm mainly scared of them. Like, it's just the time commitment.
Yeah.
I also don't read as many books a year as you do.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm like, is this going to be literally the only book I read this spring?
It could be. Yeah.
It could be, because if on average the books that I read are like 150 pages long, and I read 10 books, if we're talking about a 1,000-page book, that's like a similar-ish equation there. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of thoughts here that I've written down as advice and ideas for Claire.
Yeah.
Okay? So I have three approaches that I think, Claire, you could take here. My first idea was to create a book club with your dad.
Mm.
Divide the next big book he gives you, or the last big book he gave you, like, depending on if this is going to happen this Christmas, maybe just wait till Christmas. Or if you just want to, like, get on it, start over there, right?
Yeah.
So divide the next or last book up into sections and book club it with your dad. And you could literally just, like, take a year to read Moby Dick. Because at this point, a year to read the book will still be faster than not reading the book.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. A good point.
So that's what you have to keep in mind. Even a small little attempt every week is going to be a big difference.
Yeah.
And so you could either, depending on the levels of like intensity that you want to go with this, you could either like commit to every Sunday calling with your dad and being like, here's what I thought about the 30 pages we read this week. Or you can keep it really low key by just basically becoming accountability buddies with your dad and just texting each other every week. Just being like, I read the pages, didn't like them. And that's it. Yeah. Like, you can set expectations right at the beginning. But basically, I'm thinking that by creating a book club with your dad, two things I'm hoping will happen.
Yeah.
Number one, he will realize that the books he's been giving you are too big.
He's like, wait, this is going to take a long time.
Yeah, you're like, wait, we're going to read this over a whole year? Christ, I should really be giving my lovely daughter shorter books. But secondly, like, you might come to really turn this fear around because it will be associated with, like, reading books with your dad and, like, a much bigger level of connection with your dad. I feel like that could be really nice. My second idea. Communication. Admit to your dad that this ain't working out. Yeah. basically, in quotation marks here, I've written, Papa, I'm drowning.
Just send that audio clip of Ariel saying that.
This is the Papa, I'm drowning approach. Tell him that you love this tradition of giving each other books, that you don't want to stop, that you cherish it. And it's because you love it so much that you want to switch things up a little bit and give each other shorter books. Like, I think that if I was your dad and if my daughter came to me, wow, there's a lot of things going on here. I'm suddenly a dad. I've got a daughter. She's coming to me. If she said to me, I love that we give books to each other, but I never read the books you give me because they're too long. Could you give me shorter books? Mm-hmm. I would take that on as a happy challenge and be like, of course, there's also loads of books that I love that are short. I can give you shorter books. Maybe he just hasn't thought about it. You could also do this in a slightly less upfront way by just being like, Dad, I've been thinking about the book I'm going to get you this year. I'm really excited about it. And I think we should do a challenge. What if this year we do shortest book ever? Like, books have to be under 100 pages. Yeah. So basically you're pitching it at your dad as a fun challenge.
But it's just and what then you really want deep down.
Well, that's what, just what you want. It depends on how communicative you feel with your dad.
Yeah.
Okay. My final idea, my third approach, mm-hmm. is to make one of your dad's books that he gives you your first read of the year.
Yeah, I agree with that plan, because starting out the year with a big book is less scary than starting to read one later on. I don't know why, but
it
is.
Somehow it's less scary, because it feels like you're right out of the gate. You have the flexibility and freedom of the rest of the year to do whatever you want with that first couple of books. And so it's like you haven't even really cracked the seal on reading that year yet. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of joke around and do whatever. Right?
Just that's what joking it feels around.
Like.
Yeah.
I'm just joking around reading a big book. I personally have had a lot of fun having traditions for my first book of the year. So for a really long time, I made this up for myself, and it was just to reread a book at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, and I did it a couple times because of you. Great.
It's such a lovely way to start the year, and I really loved having that tradition. But then the things evolved, and on the podcast, we've now started this tradition of picking each other's first book of the year, and that's really fun as well. And so I think having a tradition for the first book of the year is actually really lovely and charming. And if your tradition was to read the book your dad, because you said on the pod, or sorry, in your clip, that you give each other books like for holidays and birthdays and stuff. So I'm assuming you're gonna get one for Christmas. Yeah. Right. So if your tradition was the first book I read every year is the book my dad gave me for Christmas.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful and adds like a real completionist thing, and you get it out of the way right away. Mm-hmm. I feel like that might be a good approach. Those were my ideas and strategies for you. I loved your message. Thank you so much. Raylene, what did you think?
Yeah, so I obviously agree with everything you've said, but I was also looking at this from a slightly different angle as well, which is that, here, let me pose this question to you, Claire. Do you need to get over your fear of big books, or does your dad need to start buying you books that appeal to you more?
Ooh, interesting.
Because I heard... you know, East of Eden, and it sounds like we're getting lots of large classics. Sounds like your dad is really into classics, specifically large classics for some reason. And I almost wonder if part of the problem is because maybe you don't want to read those books so much. And
that's true.
You know, maybe that's what you need to communicate to your dad. Maybe what you need to say to your dad is, you know, I love that you love these
Papa,
books.
Papa, I'm drowning.
It's the theme here. And maybe just communicate to him that, like, maybe these aren't books that you want to read, at least not for a while. Like, they're, you know, we've talked about this before. These are what we call acorn books for the most part. They're books that, sure, maybe you do want to read them, but maybe you don't want to read them right now. You're in no rush. You're young. You've got your life ahead of you. Maybe, maybe dad needs to get you something else. So that was kind of what I was looking at, I think. But also just kind of backpacking on what we were saying earlier in terms of the reason why we're scared of big books is because maybe it takes us a really long time to read them. It takes up the bulk of our reading. Sometimes you just got to let go of that fear, you know? You just got to say, you know what? If I only read 4 books this year, but they were all like bangers of books, like they were all large books that are, you know, I really wanted to read. Like, if you do genuinely want to read these books, then I think you just have to let go of the sadness of maybe missing out on some other books and just do it. Just do it.
I feel you. I want to add one more thought here.
Yeah.
Because actually this is really important to me. In her book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, Marie Kondo talks about gift giving.
Yeah.
And I actually think it's the biggest lesson I took away from her book.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Interestingly, I want to reread it because there's so many great gems in there. Mm-hmm. But just, I probably read that book a decade ago. So since then, so many of the things I read have fallen away. But this one thing has remained. When somebody gives you a gift, it is not about the gift.
Yeah.
It is about the moment. It's about the moment of love.
The
it's
act
about
of
them
giving.
Having the act of giving. It's about them having thought about you for weeks or days to prep that present. It's about them using their hard-earned money to get you something or spending their hard-earned time to make you something.
Yeah.
And then it's about giving it to you and you accepting it and loving it and enjoying that moment with them. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants you to have a logistical nightmare because of their gift.
Yeah.
And so in her context of tidying up, like what she's basically saying is like people have a really hard time letting go of gifts they've been given, even though they don't like
them.
They
feel obligated to use them.
They feel obligated to keep them because they were given to them. And my mom wanted me to have this. But your mom didn't want you to have a problem. Your mom thought this would help you. If it's not helping you, that's okay. Give it away. Your mom doesn't want to burden you with her gift, right? So I think you can kind of put this here, Claire, because maybe you don't need to read these books.
Yeah, just the act of having received them was all that you needed
to do. From your dad. Like, having them from your dad, maybe that is the gift in itself. And they are just sitting on your shelf as a lovely reminder of you and your dad's relationship. And you're going to have them, you can have them for the rest of your life and not read them, but they can still be special to you.
That's a good place to end it. I feel like we've given some very solid advice for any situation that you could find yourself in with respect to a big book. So there you go.
Well, thank you, Claire, for your message. We are now going to move on to Ren's message, which was very interesting.
Yes.
Dear Ariel and Raylene, I have a bookish tattoo on my right inner wrist, and it's Harry Potter related. It's the words, "All was well," with the A being the Deathly Hallows symbol. I am uncomfortable with it, given the current ongoing situation with the author, and I'm also trans non-binary. Not a lot of people, unless they know it's from HP, notice it, but when they do, it reminds me of the harmful rhetoric. I'm thinking of getting it covered up, but I'm conflicted as HP was a big part of my childhood, and the tattoo means more to me as a mental health reminder or mantra. I don't want to showcase HP on my body because it makes me sad either. What are your thoughts or advice can you give me on this?
Thank you so much, Ren, for your message. Yes. This is, I mean, this is like a problem of our time.
Yeah, I'm sure so many people have the same problem.
I think so many people have this problem. And I'm really glad that you brought it to our table here. And also, I saw, like, this was before all of the current J.K. Rowling stuff. Like, take it back, what, 5, 6 years or whatever. I remember seeing memes about how, like, every millennial has the Deathly Hallows tattoo. It's such a common tattoo.
I've got it.
You have it. And so I think that, like you said, Raylene, this is widespread. This is a problem a lot of people are probably having. And I mean, you just showed your tattoo. You have a few Harry Potter tattoos. So I think you should start us off share what you were thinking.
Yeah. So this, like, can be seen from so many different perspectives and angles. But the way I see it is I grew up reading Harry Potter and enjoying Harry Potter. It has nothing to do with any of the BS that J.K. Rowling has said or will ever say. Like, the message of Harry Potter and, like, the story itself, none of it has anything to do with her in my mind. Like, I don't think enjoying Harry Potter, like, either in the past or to still enjoy it now, makes you a bad person in any way. And, you know, I don't think that people should think that way. So that's just my personal opinion on that kind of thing. Having the tattoos, for me, I feel totally fine with it for those same reasons. For me, Harry Potter is my childhood. It's part of who I am. And I don't think that that makes me bad. You know, like, I think that that's...
I don't think so either, Deb,
I think that that's okay. And I think everyone else who's in the similar, you know, kind of boat should feel okay about it. However, what I want to say to Ren is if it makes you feel uncomfortable, like, absolutely lean into that emotion. Don't, like, not, you know, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but, like, if it makes you feel uncomfortable, then you should get the tattoo covered up. What I also want to say is you could always, I mean, I don't know how, if it's just the Deathly Hallows symbol specifically that reminds you of Harry Potter when you see it, or if it's the quote, because the quote obviously is from Harry Potter as well. But my thought process was, if it makes you feel any better, you can get the one that you have covered up and maybe get just the words without the Deathly Hallows symbol or something similar that's a similar sentiment so that you do still have that mental health reminder kind of on, you know, so, like, having a tattoo on your wrist, it is something you see all the time. So I can understand how that's something that you would still want to have. Just kind of removing the outright Harry Potter-ness of it, if that makes you feel better in any way, that might be an option. But I mean, if it means enough to you to just be a reminder as it is, and you don't, you know, you're able to separate the J.K. Rowling-ness of it all, then then leave it. I mean, it's totally up to what makes you feel comfortable and, you know, what's more important to you. If having that reminder on your body that you see all the time transcends the badness of the whole situation, then go with that. I think that's where I kind of come from it. And this just reminds me, there is a guy that I met at one of the Deathly Hallows midnight premieres who we saw, because it was funny, because I used to go with my group of friends. We went to the part one and then the part two, which were like 6 months apart or whatever. So we met this guy at the first one, and he was like, oh, I'm so excited. I'm going to be going to the premiere in London for the next movie. And we were like, wow, that's so cool, so exciting. And so then when we met him at the part two premiere, he had just come back. J.K. Rowling had signed his arm and he got that tattooed.
Oh my God, I can only
imagine how terrible he feels now. Like,
wow, yeah.
I think about that guy. When I think about having a Harry Potter tattoo, like, that to me is the worst possible one you could probably have, because it literally is just J.K. Rowling. It has nothing to do with Harry Potter. So that's what stresses me out, is thinking about that guy. But everything else that's just like a quote from Harry Potter or an image that brings you joy, like, that should be, you should be okay to just have that.
Especially because, you know, like, obviously J.K. Rowling, when she wrote that line, all was well, it didn't have anything to do with mental health.
Yeah.
That was just like, the story's over. Everything worked
out.
That's
true.
You have transformed it to be a mental health mantra. Mm-hmm. So it is your relationship with those words that have given it the power that has maybe helped you all this time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Gosh, this is such an interesting situation. Because like you said, Raylene, I think there's so many different ways a person can be okay with it or not be okay with it. I wrote down two quotes that Ren said. That, okay. No, just from Ren's clip. Ren said, I am uncomfortable with it.
Yeah.
And Ren said, I don't want to showcase HP on my body because it makes me sad.
Yeah.
Like, those two lines to me spoke louder than anything else.
Absolutely.
It's your body. And I think just based on that, it's time for you to let it go. For me, it makes so much sense why Raylene, you don't mind your tattoos that much.
Yeah.
Because they aren't like mental health mantras for you.
No.
They are reminding you of your childhood and stuff, but it's not the same motivations that Ren had for getting this tattoo.
Totally.
So it's very different. It's just so different. And so I think it's time for Ren to cover up the tattoo. I actually did write down a quote from one of my favorite Mary Oliver poems, Wild Geese. She says, you do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Basically saying, you're allowed to want what you want. You do not have to craniate and intellectualize your way out of or into accepting a tattoo if it's just a very simple feeling of, this tattoo makes me sad, or this tattoo makes me uncomfortable. That's reason enough to cover it up.
Yeah.
And there are really excellent cover tattoo artists whose literal job it is to help people navigate these exact problems. And I bet you could find a really cool queer tattoo artist who does these all the time and is like totally ready to help you go on to that next stage in your life. And I think that that's how I would try and conceptualize of it.
Yeah.
I would try and be like, that was another era and it's always going to be a part of you, right? Like, it's there, it's inked into your your actual skin. It's going to be a part of you,
part of your history,
but that doesn't mean you can flourish onto the next era and have something else. I even think you could probably have an artist that takes one of the words, like, well, and does something with that word and like transforms it into something
that's
else.
That's true. There's so many things you could do.
Yeah.
Ren, that's good advice.
I hope this helps. I know this was really is a tricky situation, and I'm sure that if you do get it covered, it will look really cool. I actually have a friend who had a wrist tattoo. I think it was a Harry Potter one, and she got it covered up with a really beautiful animal, and it's I think the coolest tattoo she has now.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it kind of is a little, not to go with the Harry Potter thing, but a little phoenix from the ashes and dies and becomes something better.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I obviously, like, I did point out that I have the Deathly Hallows on my wrist, and it was my first tattoo, and I still love it. I love that I got it, But now I feel like it doesn't fit with the rest of my tattoos. And so I've also considered covering it up just for that simple reason. But I haven't quite figured out how to navigate that yet. But we can do whatever we want, man. Just because you got a tattoo. People are always like, oh, that's going to be on your body for the rest of your life. It's not. It's not.
It doesn't have to.
You can get it removed. Cover that thing up. You can get it covered up.
Yeah, or you can get it removed or kind of a combo.
They're not as permanent as people think they are.
As people are freaking out about it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Ryan, thank you for your message. That was really thoughtful. We were texting about it. We were like, oh my God, these are such great questions.
Yeah, literally all of these questions, I can't believe we only got three and they were all so good.
And they were all gems.
Yes, all so good.
All right, let's hear our third message from Connie.
Hello, Ariel and Raylene. This is my bookish confession. About a year ago, I was lent a book by a coworker at the time that I did not want, and I politely tried to decline multiple times. However, I found myself in the situation where they'd brought the book in specifically to work for me, and it's now been a year and this book is on my shelf looking at me. I also no longer work with that colleague anymore. We do not live in the same city anymore. And I'm just not going to read it. So I don't know what to do with this book. Do I get back in contact with the colleague? Do I donate it? Or do I just suck it up and maybe read it and just go on a wild adventure? I'm all ears if you have any recommendations. And thank you so much for such an amazing podcast. Genuinely my favorite.
Oh, Connie.
This is such a funny
situation. So you stole a book. You stole a book and you're scared.
I love this one.
I absolutely loved. I laughed so hard listening to this message. I actually had to play it for Connor. I was like, Connie, you got it. Connie's in a bit of a pickle.
I love that. Yeah, it's funny too when we, because we have this kind of set up as like a spreadsheet. And so we ask people to send in the voice clips, but also to send kind of like a small description so that we know which one is which. And before I listened to it, I just saw it like Connie had borrowed a book from a coworker and didn't want to read it. And so before even listening to it, I was like, I can relate. So before we dive into our advice, I want to tell you, I thought it was going to be the exact same situation, but it's not. So recently, like a few months ago, I think it was in the summertime, one of my coworkers said to me, I just read this book. I think you'd really like it. Can I lend it to you? And I was like, sure, no problem. So she lends me this book, and it was like a mystery thriller, random book I've never heard of. And I was like, oh yeah, this could be a fun time. It seems like it would be a quick little read. I started reading it, and I just was like, you know what? I'm not in the mood for this right now, so I'll maybe read it later. And a couple of months have gone by at this point, and I was like, oh God, I'm still borrowing her book. I feel really bad. And so I said to her, like, I probably am not going to read this book anytime soon because I'm a mood reader and I'm not in the mood for mystery thrillers right now.
Mood.
And she was like, it's fine. Hang on to it. You can read it whenever. A couple more months go on and I'm just like, I'm never going to read this book. Like, oh God. It's just not going to happen. I need to give it back to her. And so I just gave it back to her. And she was like, oh, and I was like, no, I didn't read it. I'm sorry. I just didn't want to be holding on to your book. And she's like, it's fine. It's cool. So totally resolved. I managed to get through that situation unscathed. And I feel pretty good about that. So I was hoping that I could like use that as advice to Connie. However, Connie's situation is a little more complicated. But also simpler. In a way, it is also simpler.
In a way, it's simpler. Because I think Connie just seems a little too polite in the best way. Like, I feel like I wish everyone on earth was like Connie and has like a good moral compass. I've been given a book, I need to give it back.
But also,
and then Connie's like,
should
but
I
also
still
they
read
don't...
it? That was my favorite question of Connie. I'm like, Connie, no. You don't have to read the book.
She says, at the end, I wrote this down. She says, Connie says, should I get back in contact with this random colleague, donate it, or suck it up and read it? And I'm like, Connie, you need to set yourself free. Oh my God.
So I would say, I mean, if it is weighing heavily on your heart, then get in contact with the person and just ask if they want it back. But you don't have to do that because they should have asked for it back, when they fell out of contact, you know, when they left the job or whatever. That was their responsibility. It's their book.
With Connie, they don't even live in the same city as Connie. That's the funniest part to me. Like, we're now doing like an international hunt for a human to try and replace about a 10-pound book or something.
That's like, I think if the person really cared, one, about you reading it, but two, about you giving it back, they would have made a point to do that. And since they haven't, they're totally out of contact. I don't think you have any obligation to get into contact with them.
Yeah.
And definitely no obligation to read the book. If you don't want to read the book, please set yourself free.
Yeah.
Donate it, whatever.
I have.
If that'll make you feel better to not sell it, but to donate it, then do that.
I don't want to make a profit. Sell it and then give that money to charity.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a couple thoughts here, a couple options for Connie. Number one, I think you can. It is well within your rights to keep it as a funny memento of a silly time. Like, books come to us in so many different ways, and they just kind of land in your lap in so many different ways that I think this is a funny book to have on your shelf, and you can just have it for 40 years and be like, a random colleague that I don't even remember their name gave me that book. I don't want to read it, but I'm too scared to give it away in case one day that person still wants it.
That is kind of true. That's
funny. I think that's a funny book to have on your shelf, so that, I think, is a very good option. Number two, I think basically we are in a fix or delete situation. I think maybe I've talked about this on the podcast before, but this has been like an overriding life philosophy of mine since I was 15. So my mom was helping me clean up my room. And because even to this day, sometimes my rooms will get so messy that I'm like, I need backup help. I'm like, I need assistance. Actually, it doesn't really happen anymore. Just with laundry. Laundry piles up for me. Anyhow, that's an aerial aside. When I was a teenager, I would just let my room become so messy with items that my mom was like, we need to fix this. I'm like, no, you're right.
Yeah.
I cannot live this way. So she picked up this pair of headphones and she was like, I never see you wearing these. Do they work? And I was like, they actually don't work. They broke like a month ago.
Yeah.
She's like, so why do you have them?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. I feel guilty. I feel guilty. Like, I feel like I was supposed to fix them, but I don't think I can fix them. Like, I didn't, what do I know about electronics? I was like, I don't know how to fix them. And they were kind of expensive and I didn't have them for very long. And so I just feel guilty. So I feel like throwing them away is like giving up.
Yeah.
It's just like, I feel. And she was like, can you fix them? I was like, no. And she was like, we're throwing them away. And I was like, you're so right. And we threw them away. And it was like, literally that happened when I was 15. Here I am at 29 years old. And it has become one of my most important learning moments. And I call it fix or delete. Basically, there's so many moments in your life, and you'll have them all of the time, where something is causing you a lot of stress and or guilt.
Yeah.
And it's just like riding heavy on you. And you have to decide, can I fix this or do I need to delete it? There's only those two options.
Yeah.
Those are actually the only two options. You have to either fix the situation or delete it. And it's not like, can I fix it? Yes, I could fix it. No, will you fix this right now?
Will you?
That's or true. Do you need to delete it? And if you don't want to fix it, that's okay. But that means that you have to delete it.
Yeah.
So basically, this book is riding heavy on your heart, Connie. You have had it for a long time. It's causing you a bit of shame or guilt or whatever. You need to get rid of this book, in my opinion. And if that means fixing the situation, as in reaching out to the person and being like, I have your book. Do you want it back? I'd be happy to ship it to you.
Yeah.
And if they don't respond, then okay, you can now donate it. Or just accepting, like, they gave it to you so long ago, they clearly don't care about it. You gotta just get rid of it and delete it out of your life because it's just causing you stress. And I relate to this because I, so similar-ish to your story, really, I also have a relatable anecdote. Basically, this is so funny. I have, for the last 9 years, owed this girl $15. Basically, I was studying abroad. I was living in England, and there was a lot of us international students, and we were all friends because we were all put into like activities together.
Oh, yeah.
And so we all met each other. I was hanging out at somebody's dorm. There was a lot of people there, and we played this game. Even right now, I forget what it was called. It was like Uno.
Oh.
But I forget. It doesn't matter. So it was like Uno. It was a card game, and this girl owned it. And it was so fun. I loved it. I was like, this is such a fun game. And I said to her, I was like, what's this game called? Like, how do I get it? I want this game. I want to play this game with my friends and family. And she was like, oh, it's called this. I got it in the States. I don't know if they might not sell it here in England, where we were living at the time. And she's like, but I'm literally about to go home for March break.
Oh.
I could get you a copy and bring it back, and you could just pay me for it when I get back. I was like, that sounds perfect.
Yeah.
And to her word, she did that. She went on vacation. She went back home and got me a copy of this game, which I was never close with her. I don't know. It was really nice. It was just a nice little moment. It was very thoughtful. So she comes back. We meet up. She gives me the game, and she asks for $15. She's like, don't worry about it. Like, we didn't have pounds, and it was like kind of annoying or whatever. So she's like, it's not a rush, but just when you can, please send me $15.
Yeah.
I was like, do you have PayPal? She did not have PayPal. Oh, so no. I was like, don't worry, we'll figure this out. I'll get cash at some point. I'll give you probably 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Never happened.
Uh-oh.
I moved back to Canada. She moved back to the States. Like, we parted ways for a decade. I've thought about these $15 that I owe this girl.
Oh my gosh.
So at the beginning of this year, I messaged her and I was like, hey, I don't know if you remember me. I owe you $15.
Crazy.
And she just laughed. She was like, I don't remember that, but that's really nice. Don't worry about it. I was like,
she's forgotten.
Basically, I was like, are you sure? Like, are you sure you don't? I can PayPal you. I can buy you something. Like, if you still don't have PayPal, like, I can do something for these $15. I was like, I have the money now. Don't worry. And she was like, honestly, if you could just donate $15 to a charity of your choosing, then that would make me happy.
Aww.
I was like, this girl's so freaking nice. I was like, would it be okay if I gave it to a giraffe charity? And she was like, yeah, that sounds really great. Thanks, Ariel. I was like, thank you so much. And that's how I finally finished that debt. A Lannister always pays his debts.
Huh? There you go.
So if you need to fix it through a convoluted method to get this book back to this person, do it.
Yeah, which is what it sounds like. Because if I was in Connie's position, would have gotten rid of that book a long time ago.
Yeah, definitely.
That's just me. I would have let it go a long time ago.
I would still have it on my shelves just as a joke.
Like, that makes more sense for you. I'm a get rid of it. That's my way of fixing things. I'm like, it's clutter. I don't want to read it. Get it gone.
Get it out of here.
Yeah.
Gosh. Well, thank you, Connie, for sending us your message. That was a lot of fun. And thank you so much to all three of our wonderful voice clip contributors. If you're interested in submitting a voice clip, I think currently we're going to leave this for patrons only.
Mm-hmm.
But you could become a patron for a month just to submit your clip and then ditch right away if you want to.
Yeah.
Or you can just hold on, because if we don't get enough submissions, we'll probably open this up to the rest of the listeners. We're just trying to not get overwhelmed with the amount of submissions that we get.
Yeah, I'll have it pinned on our Patreon, so it should be very easy to find if you're looking at our Patreon page.
Wonderful. Sweet. Thank you guys again so much. We really enjoyed this special episode of Reading Confessions, and we hope we get to do one again. Maybe we'll try and do one more by the end of the year.
Oh, I would love that. Really fun. Please.
Yeah. Yay. Okay. Bye.
Bye.